Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batster. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow of Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, with me is my co-host and friend. And we're very pleased to welcome Jonathan Saya of the FDD as well, reporting on Iran after the B-2 raid. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. The Iranians have assumed that another war is coming. What does that look like to them? What kind of war is next, or a continuation of the present war? Does it look different? Good evening to you.
Good evening. We have to first discuss what war would look like in a sense of both conventional and in the shadow sense. So what we've seen so far is that since the ceasefire after the 12-day war, the war has been in the shadows in a sense that there's been reoccurring explosions and fires at very sensitive locations militarily and both intelligence across Iran. Some speculate it's Mossad. Some assume it might be just simple gas leaks. However, what matters is perception. So when it comes to the perception of both Iranians and military officials, the idea is that Israel is not done with this campaign against the Islamic Republic. So the question is, if those actions were to be renewed in a direct way, and we would have another direct confrontation between Jerusalem and Tehran, given that some of the nuclear sites have, to an extent, sustained some damage, maybe not fully destroyed, then what would be the next step? Is it just to finish the job with the nuclear sites, or are they going beyond that and actually targeting the regime's pillars of repression to ensure that actually regime change might take place? What we've seen so far being hinted from Israelis, how they've engaged the Iranian people, they've started to engage Iranian opposition here in Washington, D.C., and they're treating it like a government in exile. So more and more, the messaging coming from Jerusalem seems like they're more than before, even amplifying the voices of the Iranian people and really channeling their focus on Iranians.
Bill, you have a question for Jonathan.
Hello, Jonathan. Good evening. The Iranian opposition. So the Israelis seem eager to support the opposition. Can they succeed without U.S. or Western support? How dependent is the opposition on getting beyond just the Israeli support for support?
That's a very crucial point and something that Tehran is very worried about. So if you look at the decision-making amongst regime officials in Tehran, for the longest time, they saw America as the main existential threat against their existence. America was on every border that Iran shared with Afghanistan and Iraq. In addition to that, of course, the tensions were always high between the two countries. So they always assumed if there's going to be regime change, it's going to be led by America, as they saw what happened by their borders. But I think post-October 7th, the calculus has changed in Tehran because now they see Israel as leading those efforts. And that's not something they were necessarily prepared for. Of course, when it comes to U.S. involvement and U.S. support, U.S. further legitimizing the Iranian opposition in exile, that would go a very, very, very long way when it comes to a messaging campaign. But ultimately, what we saw with the 12-day war is that, of course, Israel would love U.S. backing. But ultimately, they would carry a lot of the weight and hope for America to really add the finishing touches, if you will. So it's not to say, it's not black and white to say it's America going to be involved or not going to be involved. It's about the extent of which. And I think Israelis have proven that they're really committed to carrying most of the operations and just paving the way for whatever they see as a desirable strategic outcome.
Let's roll the tape back a month. You report that remarks August 12th. By the prime minister and other members of the cabinet pointed to, in baseball, this would be called trash-talking the opposition before the World Series, next year in a free Tehran. Does Iran take that literally, understanding that Israel will press the attack, or do they understand that their regime is fragile, broken, brittle? Next year in a free Tehran is the kind of, that's the kind of prescience that would show up in a hexameter poem written 2,000 years ago? Is it a prediction or a threat?
I think from the Israeli perspective, they hope that it's both. So they're hoping to threaten the regime with a better alternative. So it's interesting to think about, you know, the Iranian and the Israeli angle when it comes to this. So I think for the longest time, from an Israeli perspective, they didn't want to have the war to be out in the open. They never claimed responsibility for anything they've done. And for the most part, when they attack, let's say, targets in Syria or a lot of different military campaigns they have, they don't really combine that with an effective media campaign. Now, of course, the PR campaign led by Israel during the 12-day war had some had areas that it could be more improved. But overall, it was perhaps one of the most comprehensive communication campaigns Israel had ever launched. And it's perceived from two ways. So for the average regime supporter, they see it as a threat in a sense that during the 12-day war, many of them thought that's going to be the end of the regime. So, and that paired with the new wave of sanctions that's probably going to be implemented against the Islamic Republic, they themselves admit that this is an existential threat to them. Now, when it comes to that same communication towards the Iranian people, it is perceived as a forecast. So Israel is just going beyond the fact of saying, we will help you overthrow this government. They're actually providing incentives for Iranians, saying, your country is struggling with water scarcity to a point that it's going to be an existential crisis for your very ancient nation. And how you can counter that is, we can share our technology with you as Israelis. We will help you rebuild the prosperous Iran once this regime falls. Because of course, as you know, regime change would only be the beginning of a new change in Iran. And there's a lot of dilemma as to whether it would be successful, whether it would solve our problems. And I think this Israeli messaging campaign is targeting that exact question, that yes, if you overthrow the Islamic Republic, we will ensure that Iran will be prosperous. And that goes back to Bill's question. What would be very important from a U.S. standpoint is to echo the same messaging, saying this is a regime that does not hold back on its brutality. And a day after could not be get any worse than what you have right now. Bill, we will ensure that.
Bill, you have a question.
Yeah. So who would be the prime, the target for the opposition? Is it primarily with the U.S., the Israelis? Would they go after Persians, Azerbaijanis? How do the demographics play into who would make up the bulk of the leadership and the fighters for if there was to be an armed opposition to the Iranian government? And is there any possibility that a neighboring country like Azerbaijan would allow safe haven for these groups?
That's an excellent question and something that really worries the Iranian regime. So when you look at Israeli strategy, a lot of the times they do try to leverage different ethnic groups. We know they have ties to the Kurds in Iraq when it comes to Druze in Syria. But with the case of Iran, at least during the 12-day war, there was no sign of, there was no messaging towards that. There were during the whole 12-day that Israel was really hammering down different airstrikes and intelligence operations. There was not a single separatist movement, whether it's Balochistan in the southeast bordering Pakistan or Azerbaijani Turks by the border in the Caucasus or Kurds. There was no mention of that. And that tells us one main thing, that Israel is really trying to capitalize on a secure, secular, and nationalist Iranian sentiment as opposed to a fragmented regime. Because they know if they were to go after these sectarian groups, they're going to risk alienating the Iranian sense of nationalism, which continues to be the only viable ideology or sentiment against the current regime. So from the Israeli standpoint, at least not yet, we haven't seen any indication of that. Now, if other countries can come and ate that. So there were a few reports, again, not confirmed, but they were quoting anonymous Mossad officials during the 12-day war that were claiming that the Mossad specifically had recruited Iranian dissidents to fight back against the regime. And as we saw with these groups, there was no mention of a Kurdish or PKK-linked or Pejak-linked group carrying out operations. They were just vaguely characterized as either Muslim or Iranian dissidents. So more and more, we've seen Israel try to appeal to the sense of nationalism, as we've seen how they are engaging the nationalist opposition here in Washington, D.C. So the messaging hasn't gone there yet. I'm sure they do, Israelis have a plan B, and I'm sure that plan B does consist of, as you mentioned, appealing to maybe different demographics, but so far we haven't seen that yet.
We're speaking to Jonathan Zaya of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, reporting on Iran after the B-2 raid. Bill Raggio, senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, my colleague and co-host. And when we come back, is Iran rearming? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.